Muy buenos días.
Good morning, distinguished colleagues. I'd like to welcome you to this ECOSOC meeting on the topic of the United Nations in global economic governance. As delegations are aware, the General Assembly, in its resolution 66256, There's a slight technical problem at the sound system. Is the system functioning? The General Assembly, in its resolution 66256 on the United Nations in global governance, invited the President of the General Assembly and the President of the ECOSOC to organize informal thematic debates on the subject. The interpreters would like to point out there's a serious sound problem. We cannot interpret. This meeting follows closely a thematic debate . Since the opening words were not terribly important, I'll continue. I just would like to welcome you all. This meeting follows a thematic debate hosted last month by the General Assembly on the United Nations and global economic governance. The thematic debate was rich in both substance and levels of participation. There was agreement among member states at that meeting that strengthening global economic governance remains of utmost importance given the still frail recovery from the global economic and financial crises and the serious emerging challenges related to addressing climate change, ensuring food security, maintaining global financial stability, and assuring the adequate supply of key resources such as energy and water. These new challenges require forceful and internationally coordinated policy responses and would undoubtedly be best addressed in the context of a more accountable, inclusive and coherent system for global economic governance. Such a system would entail effective arrangements for collective decision-making among diverse stakeholders at the international level. In this regard, efforts to reform existing international governance arrangements need to pay heed to important new developments and actors in the global economic arena, with a rising demand for a rebalancing of global economic power. The evolving global landscape, characterized by the growing economic importance of emerging economies, has encouraged the formation of new informal bodies such as the G20, with an increasing role in the international economic policy making. These reforms should be complemented by efforts to ensure that economic decision making at the international level becomes more collaborative and inclusive. It's of particular importance that the G20 continues to strengthen its engagement and cooperation with the United Nations through more institutionalized, predictable, and regular channels, and further enhances its relationships with formal institutions, non-members of the G20, and other relevant stakeholders. Also, the United Nations could become a venue for enhanced interaction between international financial and trade institutions, the G20 and the G20 non-member states, by providing a platform to reflect on common concerns and share views. The post-2015 development agenda will need a more structural, inclusive and systemic approach that can deliver on the transformative change needed to address current and emerging challenges and suggest credible strategies towards a secure, sustainable, and inclusive pathway for global development. To this end, the international community needs a strengthened system of global economic governance which goes beyond crisis prevention and management and seeks a more accountable, more inclusive, and transparent global governance framework. The United Nations has a central role in global economic governance to gather both the necessary political will and policy coordination at the international level as a truly universal and inclusive multilateral forum with unquestioned legitimacy. Strengthening the role and effectiveness of the United Nations would be an important contribution towards a more coherent and coordinated framework for consistent and effective policymaking. As a starting point, efforts need to be made to enhance accountability, effectiveness, and the coherence of the United Nations systems at the intergovernmental, institutional, and operational levels. The SG's report on global economic governance and development emphasized that utmost priority should be given to implementing the Rio Plus 20 outcome, which provides important mandates for strengthening the institutional framework for sustainable development. That report also recommended that coherence be ensured across various United Nations intergovernmental processes, including those relating to sustainable development, the post-2015 development agenda, and financing for development. As proposed by the Secretary-General in his recent report on strengthening the ECOSOC, a strengthened ministerial review could become a central venue for monitoring the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda supported by the entire ECOSOC system. The Development Cooperation Forum could promote mutual accountability as an overarching principle in the post-2015 development agenda. In this regard, we have an opportunity to truly rationalize the system by building on the strength of what exists for the post-2015 development agenda. To enhance the functioning of the United Nations, we should strengthen the effectiveness of its main organs. ECOSOC has a key role as playing convening spacer of the wider UN development agenda. And integration of three dimensions of sustainable development, preparation of the post-2015 development, and effective implementation and follow-up on outcomes agreed at the major United Nations conferences and summits. A comprehensive transformation is required in order to achieve a more focused program of work, strengthen its agenda, and improve its working methods, interactions with other United Nations organs and subsidiary bodies. As decided at the Rio Plus 20 conference, United Nations GIA is also conducting informal consultations for the creation of a high-level political forum that will support the implementation and monitoring the concept of sustainable development in its three dimensions. In this regard, the ECOSOC reform and the high-level political forum process should be closely linked, given the important tasks for which they have been created and the role they both have in the sustainable development agenda. We need to enhance the participation of developing countries in decision-making and establishing international norms. An effective system requires the active participation of civil society and private sector in dialogue relating to development. In conclusion, I would like to repeat that a more effective and inclusive global governance system will be necessary to ensure that we achieve the Millennium Development Goals and to establish a post-25 development agenda which is actionable. I am confident that today's discussion will help us to move forward in the direction of arriving at a common ground from which meaningful reform can be undertaken in this regard. Thank you very much. Now we would like to invite our panelists. And firstly, I'd like to give the floor to His Excellency Mr. Masood Khan, the permanent representative of Pakistan to the United Nations and Vice President of the Council, to make a statement. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Ambassador Osorio, for introducing today's subject, and you have given a comprehensive analysis. I'll make brief remarks. The first remark that I have is that the United Nations has a central role in global economic governance. It has policy-making bodies, and it has an elaborate operational apparatus. I need not go into that, but just to recount, I mean, we have the General Assembly, the ECOSOC, one specific committee within the General Assembly, which is the second committee, and third committee issues. They are all related to economic governance directly or indirectly. We also have the legitimacy of these organs, the GA and the ECOSOC or charter bodies. They have their own weight, their clout. They represent the aspirations of the nations around the world and now increasingly citizens around the world. We should not define United Nations economic governance narrowly, because United Nations, as I said, has an elaborate system. We have these policy-making bodies, but then we have funds and programs. We also have other specialized organs like the ILO, like WIPO, like WHO, and then we have the regional commissions in different parts of the world, and we have regional policy-making and operational bodies. We also have banks working directly with the United Nations. So it is already playing an important role in economic governance. What the United Nations has to deal with is the emergence of new global forums. And in this, in particular, we've been mentioning in the past, G20, G8 has been there for many, many years. There are many other organizations which have emerged in the past three or four decades. What we have is that, I mean, probably sometimes our assumption is that the multilateral system that we have is monolithic or ought to be monolithic. It is not, and we know that. We live with plurality and diversity in multilateral decision-making. I would like to say that I would like to use a term, plurilateral multilateralism. It's a tongue twister, but still it captures the essence of what we are doing today. I would also like to address the question of the legitimacy and effectiveness. The United Nations has all the legitimacy that a multilateral organization needs. In fact, its legitimacy is 100%. There is no other organization in the world that can compete with the United Nations General Assembly or the ECOSOC in claiming legitimacy. Why? Because all nations of the world are represented in these forums. And second, because they are interacting with the citizens also. We're working with civil society. We're also working with the private sector, international financial institutions. So this gives this authority and, as I said, legitimacy to the United Nations. Do we have 100% effectiveness? I would say no, because all multilateral organizations, there's always, in them, there's always a gap between what they want to do and what they can really achieve. So the United Nations has legitimacy 100%, but not effectiveness. Other organizations, for instance, some corporate entities, some other organizations like, I would not mention any other plurilateral organizations, but they demonstrate effectiveness more than the United Nations can. And herein lies the difference between United Nations multilateralism and those particular functional organizations that are created from time to time. So what we have to do, if we do not have a monolithic vision of multilateralism, what we have to do, we have to work on complementarity. Complementarity between the United Nations, being the most legitimate organization in the world, with other actors, whether they are regional actors or global actors. And in that, I would mention, for instance, G20. This has been discussed quite a few times. Bank of Settlements and Financial Stability Board. The other point that I want to mention is that the United Nations needs more coherence and cohesiveness within its own system. Because the United Nations, I don't want to use that term, but it is like it's like a Leviathan. It has tentacles all over the world. If, for instance, I mean, going to the operational side, if you go to the ops room of WHO, it has access to the remotest corners of the world. No other organization, multilateral organization, has that capability. Similarly, OCHA, for instance, it is becoming much more sophisticated, more interconnected all around the world. So, but there is a tendency for these very powerful multilateral organizations to work in silos and forget about synergy. So what we need to do is to promote, foster more synergy amongst different multilateral organizations. The challenge before the United Nations, and I would say the General Assembly and ECOSOC, is to manage change. And here, today, at this point of time, we have an opportunity. General membership and the members of the ECOSOC are right now focused on five areas which would affect the structure, the direction of the United Nations in the coming years and decades. One, of course, is post-2015 development agenda. That's very important because we can chart our, the course of history as far as the United Nations is concerned. The second is, of course, sustainable development goals. We're working on ECOSOC reform. We're trying to create a high-level political forum, and we have to grapple with the issue of financing for development. Now, here, pursuing the direction given by RioPlus20, if we can get social, economic, and environmental dimensions right, we would put the United Nations back in the center of decision-making for multilateralism. This group called 3Gs, or 3G, Global Governance Group, this has been making a good contribution. And I was going through their speeches and the literature that they have produced and the resolution that they have been steering in the General Assembly. I would say that they are not trying to create an alternative pole. What they are trying to do is to create some sort of amalgam between these forums which have emerged all around the world and the United Nations. So that United Nations, General Assembly, ECOSOC, and these plurilateral forums can combine their efforts. There can be more communication. I think what we need is more coordination, more communication, and more synergy. So this is what this group is trying to do, and I would like to place on record that I laud their efforts, and we would like to support what they're trying to achieve. Final 3 points I would like to say. Is the United Nations experiencing an identity crisis? Why is it that we're always finding fault with the United Nations? I think the United Nations still is the indispensable multilateral body. And I was sitting through a debate next door, and they're discussing water and energy. The crux of the debate is that the United Nations is the most empowered body, the most legitimate body to take decisions on the most vital issues before being faced by humanity. We need, of course, when we talk about reform or self-improvement, we need more introspection. This is precisely what is happening at the United Nations. This is necessary for renewal and reform. This is a healthy exercise because no organization, no matter how powerful it is, can remain static. I have seen the text of Chile's resolution. It's a good resolution. I also would like to recommend everybody to read a statement which was made by Chilean Foreign Minister on April 15, 2013. It's a very good statement, and it in fact captures the essence of the debate about the United Nations at the center, at the helm of multilateralism. And finally, because this the last year's UNGA resolution had mandated engagement on this subject in the UNGA and in ECOSOC, and we have the president of ECOSOC here, I would like to say that ECOSOC has made tremendous contribution to norm setting, also on the operational side through its functional commissions. It has contributed to work to the work of funds and programs. When we talk about strengthening of ECOSOC, we should also recount its competencies, existing competencies, and how we can consolidate those competencies and transition this forum towards a new phase where it would be able to address contemporary issues dealing with the economic, social, and environmental dimensions. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Khan, for your very important statement in which you highlighted not only the characteristics and the capacities of our organizations, but also the importance that its organs should be properly used and exercise the influence that they should exercise and work in a coherent way, something to which you made a special appeal. Now I'd like to give the floor to His Excellency Mr. Murad Ben Mehidi, Permanent Representative of Algeria to the United Nations. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for organizing this debate and for the kind invitation. I would like to thank you and to thank my dear friend, the distinguished permanent representative of Chile, Ambassador Octavio Errázuriz, for having been proactive in mobilizing the membership around this very important theme with his mission and his like-minded group of countries. Global governance necessarily links to the development of globalization. Mr. President, before the globalization, it all started in 1945 with this charter. Chapter 9 and Article 55. What is the ultimate goal? The purpose and the goal is that with a view to the creation of conditions of stability and well-being, which are necessary for peaceful and friendly relations among nations, and so on, the United Nations shall promote higher standards of living, full employment, and conditions of economic and social progress and development. You, Mr. President, you are supposed to provide those conditions to the membership, full employment and higher standard of living. That's the final target. How to achieve this? Of course, the Charter has put in place institutions and the General Assembly, the ECOSOC, and the agencies, the UN system at large. It did evolve since then in a manner that, in fact, did not made of the global governance the central issue. We were and still are, we believe, in a kind of economic Westphalian system where member states used to apprehend the economic and social development of their nations internally, nationally, maybe at the sub-regional level, but not yet at the global level. And we have witnessed the evolution of the international cooperation and global governance going from national decisions taking unilaterally to feeling the need for improving coordination and economic and monetary issues, for instance, with the development of bilateral, plurilateral policy agreements, the G4, the G7, the G8, the G20. The evolution started, of course, from the development of the respective economies of the member states and the main actors of the world trade in that time, with the necessity to better coordinate the exchange rates and the monetary policies. We have witnessed the need to come together for the major economies in the early 80s, for instance, with the Plaza agreements, the Louvre agreements in Europe, and so on, to now reach the situation where it has increased to informal groupings, reuniting, we are saying, between 80 and 85% of the global GDP in order to better coordinate the policies and to sometimes make decisions that have systemic effects on those who don't belong to the those groupings. We understand the need for the United Nations organs and system to contribute to the governance as the desire of the membership to provide a legitimate, the legitimacy of the framework against the association of the membership to the decision making at the economic for the economic policies, the contribution of the United Nation framework will somehow put in together the need for legitimacy with the need for effectiveness and correcting the imbalances worldwide. We have, in my view, at this stage, there is the need to verify whether there is the will to enter together in such a contract. We are talking about the will to work together. We have first to verify whether those making the in charge of the global governance, the international financial institutions first, and the informal intergovernmental bodies like the G20 and the G8, have the will to work with the United Nations. In principle, the answer is yes. They have assured the United Nations that they are willing to cooperate. I believe this has been made possible because the membership is common to both organizations and groupings. And second, for the United Nations to benefit from this cooperation, we need to find a way to, for the membership to express their concerns to those institutions and groupings before they make their decision, and to report back to the central forum, which is the UN General Assembly and other institutions, in order to do the follow-up. This has been organized also by the Charter. As far as the ECOSOC is concerned, Article 63 recommends that the ECOSOC enters into agreement with the agencies. We can extrapolate that the informal groupings are covered by this reference to the agencies if we would like to do so. But there is clearly the need to enter into agreements in order to define the term on which the agency concerns shall be brought into relations with the United Nations. So the Charter has requested us to initiate this kind of agreements. We can legitimately start working with whatever grouping we believe is taking decisions that have implications on the wider membership based on the Charter. And I believe that the major economies working together in small groupings have an interest in making the best use of the United Nations system, its capacity to garner the economic information, its presence worldwide in all regions and continents, and its ability to do the necessary spreading of important decisions they might take at the global level for their own economies, but that has implication on all the members of the organization. As my dear friend Masoud has rightly mentioned, there are calls made by the membership, and he mentioned the distinguished foreign minister of Chile in his statement in last April. It was precisely related to the need to pay attention to the kind of decisions that have systemic implications that are taken by those forums. I would like to stop here while congratulating the group of like-minded countries around Chile for their draft resolution. And we will have at some point, Mr. President, to discuss among ourselves within the United Nations who might represent the United Nations in this global governance. Are we in agreement that it should be the centrality or the contribution of the UN should be through the General Assembly, the high-level forum that we foresee for the sustainable development in the coming decades? Is it for the ECOSOC to play this role? If it is for the ECOSOC, beside the legitimacy of being vested by the Charter with this role together with the General Assembly, is the ECOSOC providing us with the necessary legitimacy we are referring to? I mean, through the limited membership of the ECOSOC, are we doing justice to the need for legitimacy? Or shall we rely on the ECOSOC for the second concern of ours, the effectiveness, All those questions have to be discussed. I have sensed from the debate on other processes led by our colleagues facilitating the discussion on the high-level forum, political forum, and the discussion led by our colleagues on the reform of the ECOSOC, that the membership sometimes is not clear about the interpretation of the call made by the Rio conference outcome document vis-à-vis the role of the ECOSOC. Yes, integration of the three pillars of sustainable development have explicitly been attributed to the role of the ECOSOC. However, it has not been clear yet whether this means that the ECOSOC should be the organ vested with the implementation of the International Development Agenda post-2015 and the Sustainable Development Agenda, which is due to be the main roadmap for the decades to come. We are at the juncture where we are waiting for the various processes to produce important conclusions. The high-level panel reform on the of the Secretary General on the post 2015 MDGs question, the open working group on SDGs, the open the group on financing of sustainable development for the period to come. All those are due to be put together within the framework of the United Nations at some point. And from there, having re-clarified the objective we were referring to at the beginning, we could from there enter in a more informed discussion on how to shape the institutional aspect of for the United Nations to interact with external actors, including non-state actors when it comes to global governance. And we said nothing up to now concerning the political and security aspect of the global governance. It has at some point also to be brought into the debate since we are discussing the global balances of both the peace and security pillar and the economic and social pillar. Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to stop here. Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Ben Mehidi, for his interesting statement in which he does well to remind us of what is the origin here in this Charter of the United Nations of our commitments to the international community and of our mandates in terms of economic and social development, and also to look forward at how this legitimacy lies in the representation of states in our organization and how this is promoted in terms of governance with regard to giving a voice to and representation in the United Nations. That's how you have referred to it and given it such importance for the future of agendas. Now I'd like to give the floor to the acting head of delegation of the European Union. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, also for hosting this debate. And like previous speakers, I would like to applaud Chile for their consistent efforts to promote this this very important debate. There can be no better evidence, I think, of the importance that the European Union attaches to this debate from the fact that the President of the European Commission, Mr. Barroso, has twice attended high-level thematic debates of the General Assembly, both in the current and in last year's session. And it shouldn't come as a surprise. The importance that we attach is a reflection of who we are, of what the European integration project was from its very inception, with already at the times of the single market. But it's also a reflection of current economic realities. There's a lot of Europe bashing in the last 2 or 3 years, mainly because of our economic difficulties that we're faced with. But in spite of those difficulties, our member states produce about 25% of the world's GDP, about a quarter of the planet's currency reserves are denominated in euros. More than 50% of development aid is provided collectively by the EU and its, in its member states. We are the world's first importer and the world's second exporter. So we have a strong vested, if I may say, interest in making sure that our mantra, which is effective multilateralism, works in practice. All the words have already been pronounced: effectiveness, legitimacy, cooperation, coordination, coherence, convergence, synergies. These are all concepts on which nobody would disagree with in this room. Of course, the difficulty, of course, the proof is always of the pudding is in the eating and how we go about doing our business. There have been some positive development coming from this interdependence. About 600 million people have been lifted out of poverty, and this is no small measure linked to the MDGs. We have seen the emergence of new actors, both the civil society, non-state actors. That, of course, adds some difficulty in the equation, because governments have it's not always easy for them to cope with these actors, and it's even more difficult sometimes for the traditional intergovernmental discourse, such as the one that we're having here at the United Nations, to cope with. But it also provides lots of opportunities, not least in the field of finding new ways of financing for development. We have the Bretton Woods institutions have taken steps to make sure that we can have a more responsive, a more accountable governance. They have either enhanced their already existing instruments, or designed new ones, or adapted those instruments and the economic priorities to the new realities. We warmly welcome the fact that the World Bank is strongly engaged in trying to promote and to support the United Nations in promoting the post-2015 agenda. And we hope that this process will continue so as to give everyone the opportunity to have a stronger voice, and that includes also the LDCs. The G20 has been extremely helpful in dealing with the post-2008-2009 crisis. I think it played a major role in making sure that we would the world would not spiral out of control like it did in the 1930s. But also since then, everything related to stable international financial system, job growth, combating protectionism. I know there's a very large debate over the legitimacy of the G20. I would argue that if we look at the percentage of what the participants in this grouping represent in terms of the world GDP or the world population, there's certainly a counter-argument to be made there. And, of course, we strongly believe that the G20 represents some real added value when it comes to to the discussions on the on development issues. I would like to refer also, it was already mentioned, of course, the post-2015 agenda. This is what we will be judged upon, also by the future generations, how effective we are in eradicating poverty and also achieving sustainable development at the same time. It has to be coherent, simple, and effective. Important developments also have taken place when it comes to the financing for development. We need to build on Monterrey to aid effectiveness. Busan provided a very important new partnership, which is broader, which is more inclusive, and we have shared and common goals on the one hand, but also differential commitments. And this is also at the heart of the of our new development aid policy, the Agenda for Change. Instead of just doling out money in a one-size-fits-all kind of system, we discuss with the country concerned what its strategic priorities are, and we try to come up with a plan that will assist them achieve their objectives. And we also are in touch with other donors that are involved with that country, so that there's no duplication, and we collectively achieve the best possible results. The ECOSOC, since we're here today, it has already been mentioned by you and also by others. We believe it has a key role to play. This role was reaffirmed in Rio. Its convening power, its central position in to ensure system-wide consistency. We believe that the discussions that are ongoing on ECOSOC reform and how to make the agenda of the Council more effective are very important, and they will be key. And we also believe that there should be a strong link between the ECOSOC and the high-level forum to make sure that we get the kind of convergence and consistency and integrated approach that we very much need for the post-2015 era. I will end with some main conclusions. We need multilateral structures that can manage interdependence and today's multi-central world. We need to find the best possible combination of legitimacy and effectiveness. And when we refer to ourselves here in New York and the various bodies, we need to sometimes ask ourselves some hard questions about how effective we are. It is a fact that we waste way too much time on process, not so much or very often on substance. And unless we find a way to be more effective, decisions will continue to be taken elsewhere, because the problems will not wait for us to agree whether it should be a 30 or a 70 or a 193 member group, or whether under what status NGOs should be invited to participate in high-level meetings of the United Nations. We also need to remember that accountability has to be a two-way street. Of course, you want to have world bodies that are accountable, but also the members need to be accountable on their side. Here the concepts of good governance, the rule of law, we had an important meeting last year, we should not forget, with a very important cross-sectional impact, should really be the guiding force. And we really need to see how we can, we need to have a close look at and agree on how we can incorporate the new actors, in particular the non-state actors, in our debates. These are not easy discussions. We need to focus again on the synergies, on the ways in which we can cooperate. We need trust, possibly more trust among ourselves. But this is a debate in which we, the European Union, and its member states are very keen to participate, as we have proved several times. Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much to Ambassador Vrailis for that contribution, in which you clearly highlighted what is the European Union's role in this architecture of global governance and its role in the financing for development, which is one of the crucial elements in our analysis currently, and how our institution could, in line with what was being said by the ambassador of Algeria, give this legitimacy and representation and ensure the efficiency in meeting all these mandates on which we are all working. This is an interesting concept, and I'm sure that our chairman, Dr. José Antonio Ocampo, chair of the Committee for Development Policy, will also touch upon in his statement. So we're not only looking at the United Nations work, but at examining the complexities of global governance as a whole. And we're pleased to see him with us this morning. And you have the floor, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I accepted this invitation today to be with you, and I'd particularly like to welcome the interest showed by the delegation of Chile in convening this meeting and the initiative it took as the group on global governance also. But to facilitate understanding, I will speak in the lingua franca. Let me speak English.
So let me start by making some statements about the, you know, the APEX organization for global economic governance. And state on very strong terms that, you know, I am in favor of creating a new institution that will be the APEX organization that coordinates the work of the United Nations system, including bringing into the United Nations system the WTO. This was the proposal that was made by the Stiglitz Commission, in which I was a member, that was convened by the President of the General Assembly in 2009. In our proposal, we call it the Global Economic Coordination Council. I know the this issue, of course, does not have a significant support, but I think it should be debated. It should be debated formally and see in what extent. I actually see the Global Economic Coordination Council as a sort of evolution of the Group of 20 that will actually, you know, and so the Group of 20 could be understood as a step in this direction, but in order to, you know, be that right step in that direction, it should actually discuss among its members how to evolve into something that is more legitimate. I understand there is a lot of discussion about what legitimacy means, but for me, legitimacy is also the representation of minorities. I mean, since I have a strong democratic principles, democracy is not only the government of majorities, it's also the respect and participation of minorities. And so long as that is not included into the views of a global governance body, I cannot give the concept of legitimacy to the Group of 20. I think the Group of 20 lacks essential elements of legitimacy. No matter how what proportion of the world population, world GDP they represent, I think it, you know, just doesn't meet the criteria or what I consider to be the basic concept of legitimacy, which is what the United Nations has. It's actually also what the Bretton Woods institutions have, as part of the United Nations system, which they should always consider themselves to be. I know there's questions by themselves of whether they are part of the United Nations system, but the United Nations system includes the Bretton Woods institutions. Okay, so that is my first point. I think this is quite important. You know, you can also discuss the effectiveness of the Group of 20. I would say that, you know, the Group of 20 has played a positive role during this crisis. There is no question about that. It's also a mixed record, because I think this early stage was a very effective institution. It has been much less effective later on. I mean, the discussions within its members are clearly present. And also, there is one of the areas in which it has made its best contribution, which is in financial regulation. It's actually one of the most controversial in terms of legitimacy, because I understand the Financial Stability Board, which is the creation of the G20, has played a very positive role. But for countries that are not members, but are almost forced to adopt the principles agreed by the Financial Stability Board, there is a basic concept of, that's where actually the issue of legitimacy comes clearly. Because, all countries at the end will be forced to adopt the principles of the Financial Stability Board. But why should you accept principles in which you had no voice in their design? Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the problem that I'm trying to present. So the Financial Stability Board should evolve into a more legitimate organization. There are very, many possibilities. But I feel the Financial Stability Board should evolve into a treaty-based organization of a universal character, or do it through a different means, which is actually my own personal proposal, which is to incorporate the functions of the Financial Stability Board into the Bank of International Settlements and make the Bank of International Settlements a global organization, which is the one possibility that doesn't mean creating new institutions. Okay, first set of comments. The second set of comments relate to the UN organization and its relation to the UN system. The role of the General Assembly and ECOSOC in the global economic governance. And let me start by saying that I think the membership of the United Nations has to take a serious discussion about the division of labor between the General Assembly and ECOSOC. There is no, part of the basic problem that you suffer as member states, that the secretariat suffers as secretariat, and since I was a member of the secretariat, I can testify of that, and with all the freedom to speak today, as I don't have that role today. But there is not, there is a significant duplication of functions between the General Assembly and ECOSOC that has to be settled for good. Everything. You take the UN Charter. The UN Charter gives both the General Assembly and ECOSOC the functions in policy, okay? But at the same time, it gives ECOSOC more the function of coordination of the UN system, not the General Assembly. So in that coordination role in the ECOSOC should be the number one function. But the main instrument of coordination in the UN system is called the Quadrennial Comprehensive Policy Review. It goes through both ECOSOC and the General Assembly. That's a particular demonstration that there is a total duplication of functions. In my view, the Quadrennial Comprehensive Policy Review should be a function of ECOSOC and should end in ECOSOC. And actually should be tied to another thing that I have for a long time been saying, is that ECOSOC should be the board of the boards of the funds and programs. I mean, since ECOSOC actually elects the members of the boards of the funds and programs, you know, that is particular demonstration that it is the head, the board of boards, let's say. But that function is not exercised again because there are many functions that the General Assembly also exercises in relation to the boards in the funds and programs, including exactly the quadrennial comprehensive policy review. All the functions that are in the coordination of the funds and programs should, you know, be exercised, in my view, by ECOSOC and not by the General Assembly. So it still gives, question of what is the role of policy and how to divide the responsibilities between the General Assembly and ECOSOC in relation to policy. I understand that it will be impossible and probably inconvenient to think of the or to eliminate that function in the economic and social and environmental field from the General Assembly. That will, of course, will never be approved by the UN membership. I'm clear about that. However, at least there should be a very clear, you know, again, division of labor. For example, just one step back, the creation of the high-level political forum in Rio Plus 20, you know, is another contribution to that confusion, in my view. I mean, you had in ECOSOC the Commission for Sustainable Development, which in a sense already, you know, played the role of coordination of the and of course Rio Plus 20 gave ECOSOC the function of the, you know, of the integrated follow up of the of the three dimensions of sustainable development, which I think is I prefer that statement to the creation of the high level political forum. I understand that that's also a reality, and as well as the elimination of the Commission of Sustainable Development that it implies, which, you know, on which I have more question marks. But let me say that at least one function that should be clearly put in the hands of ECOSOC is that coordinated follow-up of the UN summits and conferences, or the follow-up and the associated accountability for international commitments of all the development goals. So that function should at least be clearly recognized as the function of ECOSOC and one in its policy role and following in that regard UN Charter states in relation to ECOSOC. The additional point that I want to make relates to the in that regard, I think in the discussions that are going on about ECOSOC reform, that should be clearly understood as an evolution from the idea of the annual ministerial reviews that were created in 2007, which was a way of moving precisely in the direction of stronger accountability for the international commitments, which, again, should be a basic function of ECOSOC. The third issue that, you know, that I want to mention in relation to ECOSOC and the General Assembly is related to the other reform of 2007, which is the creation of Development Cooperation Forum. I think ECOSOC has the possibility of being, you know, the top international organization in terms of coordination of cooperation with developing countries. Of the whole United Nations system, including in this regard, very importantly, the World Bank, but also the International Monetary Fund in its competences, but also, you know, perhaps other organs, even those that are not formally part of the UN system, including, for example, WTO, which has also a very important role in certain areas of cooperation with developing countries. Now, so what that means in particular, I would say, is that the post-Busan process should be formally incorporated into the Global Development Cooperation Forum. Okay? so as to have as to make that organ really the top international follow-up process for. This leaves me one final point, which relates to the coordination of the broader UN system, how to exercise that function. And let's be clear on that, ECOSOC has never quite done it in the past, has never really coordinated the broader UN system. But how to guarantee the coherence of the system should be of that function, including one particular issue which is never quite discussed, which is filling the gaps in the international system of cooperation. So I think that actually should be a function of ECOSOC, to think about what are the gaps in the system and how to fill them and make proposals about, in one sense, that has always been a UN task, because the issues of the gaps in cooperation have always been a UN issue. It's not really a non-UN issue. It's never discussed, as far as I can see, in the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund. It's really discussed in the UN at one point or another. And there are many gaps in the system. For example, tax cooperation. I mean, the only international committee that, you know, of a global character that does that is actually one of the expert committees of ECOSOC, the Committee on Tax Cooperation, Cooperation on Tax Matters. You can think of other, for example, in debt. You know, I think the world at one point has to create a formal mechanism for the restructuring of debts of over indebted countries. That's a major gap in the international system. Perhaps it should be the responsibility of the IMF, I mean, as it was proposed a few years ago. But the discussion of how to fill that gap, I think, has to be a UN discussion. And whatever is said in the UN should be. But, you know, in relation to the to that broader system, it's difficult to think of exercising that function in a very strong manner. In that regard, the coordination of the specialized agencies is a more difficult task than coordination of the funds and programs, which I think should be, as I pointed out, a specific function of ECOSOC. Because that is, the fact that the ECOSOC, elects the members of the boards of the funds and programs, it makes ECOSOC, by nature, the entity that should be in charge of that. So in the Secretary General reports on ECOSOC, there is the idea that the function in relation to specialized agencies should be issues-based, so based on issues. And I think that's a good principle to start to think about coherence with the broader UN system and take issues as the way of coordination. I think that is probably a correct way of, and should be and the way we advance in that direction will probably teach the United Nations system how to improve in that regard. So those were my comments, Mr. President.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ocampo, for your very important creative contributions, which are always so creative, and you've referred to some very interesting differences in the points of view from panelists in terms of coordination, and this final theme also, which was referred to fill the gaps that exist. Recently, we tried to do it. We had a forum on debt. The principal speaker there was Mr. Stieglitz. We also had this on taxes. And also we've had informal discussions. We need to institutionalize this perhaps and move forward, dealing with these in the best way possible. Now, I'd like to launch an interactive discussion in which people can submit their views. Could you kindly press the button below the microphone? The light will become green, and then it will give me a list of speakers, and I will give the floor. But first of all, the representative of Chile has requested the floor, and you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. I would like to thank you for organizing this, I think, relevant, important, and timely debate on on the United Nations role in global economic governance. I would also like to thank all the panelists. It's kind word to Chile or to my minister. My comments will be around that. What is our place with respect to global governance, global economic governance? For our, I mean United Nations. I think that this debate is requested in accordance to Resolution 256, that is called the UN in Global Governance, a resolution that really created a new sub-item in the General Assembly, a plenary, the central role of the UN system in global governance. And let me stress the idea, central role, and then we talk global governance and system. What was the purpose of this resolution that was the new one? Is in some way, I think, is to support and yes, an effective, but also an inclusive multilateralism. I think it is a response and a timely response to a threat of marginalization of the UN in the consideration on many global challenges. So it is, I think it is a way of saying we need to be at the front whenever we deal with global challenges. We feel also that, yes, we have some clubs and grouping of countries, but this grouping of countries can be very positive, and they're fine, but there is a problem when this club of countries make rules and policies that affect not only themselves, but also the world as a whole. This is the question of legitimacy that Professor Ocampo was mentioning. I think it is very relevant to discuss those issues because the UN, as Ivan said, is the most universal, inclusive, and legitimate forum of the international community. And whatever we can say of their limitation, I think it has an important role in global economic governance. Perhaps not a technical one, but it is a political space for discussion and general guidelines on economic issues and also from a development perspective. As I think Ambassador of Pakistan said, we are the indispensable body, while others also are necessary and very important. I think that also this debate, it is important that because today that we live in a global depression, the voice of the UN is needed. The problems today are technical, yes, but in reality it is a political problem also that we are living when so many in so many places are suffering from this global crisis. And let me also say that that made clear that, again, that we need to be at the helm of whatever response the world is, is organizing regarding to this crisis. It is very good to have this technical grouping of countries and WTO on trade and IMF, and but the UN is needed. And the last thing I just want to say, that it is timely, and I'm going to my own house and what we are doing, because today, and this afternoon, we will start the negotiation on a new substantive resolution on this item. And here, I will remember what was said by Ambassador from Algeria. We need political will. What I have seen in the first discussion and first among delegates is at least sometimes some reluctance, sometimes, a goodwill. But at the end of the day, let me say that a resolution of the UN is needed here. It is a plenary item, and we need to say what needs to be said. And I think no one needs to be threatened. I think the UN is not saying that this is the only place, but we are just saying it is a necessary place. It is the indispensable body. So, again, we need to make clear that there is a central role for the UN in this debate in global economic governance. To end, I must say, yes, at the center, yes, I will say indispensable, but to paraphrase what I think was said by a lady in Alabama many years ago, Rosa Parks, when you are dealing with the global challenges, we should be in the front. The UN should be not to be sidelined, I think, and to the back of this bus that is going on, dealing with global economic governance. So the only thing I can say, the UN should be in the front. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the representative of Chile. The list of speakers is open for whoever would like to take the floor. So I do call upon you to raise any questions or make any comments that you may have. Until a request is made to take the floor, I would like to put a question to Dr. Ocampo. He referred to a very sensitive issue. That's the possible need to establish a new coordination institution, coordination body. There are always temptations when there are gaps to create new institutions, and so we just go on increasing this institutional universe. Now, this part of your presentation, could you clarify how this institution, what form it would take?
Let me go to the proposal that was presented by the Stiglitz Commission. In a sense, the proposal you can think of it as an evolution of the Group of 20, which is an existing institution, we pointed out, first of all, that it has to be an institution that coordinates the UN system, not the UN organization, let's say, because that's clearly a function of the General Assembly and ECOSOC. That, in a sense, it would be an organization very similar in that sense to the G20, which would meet at the heads of state level, let's say once a year or so, maybe more under specific circumstances. The membership would be universal, but it will use the weighting voting system. As in the Bretton Woods institution, except that we have to, we will have to think what is the sort of weights that you give to the different components of the, that you that could be defined. Could be first of all, some element of one country, one vote, which is what in the Bretton Woods is called the basic votes. But also economic weight of countries. They say GDP defined, either or in a mix of market a market measure or a purchasing power parity measure. It is, and you can consider whether you want to give weight to population, which is another criterion. It has never been used in the Bretton Woods institutions. So we basically really propose something based on one country, one vote, so a basic vote plus economic weight. Now, the weighting voting system has the basic advantage that it allows a small body, a small decision-making body that is representative of the whole membership, which, by the way, it will be very difficult to agree with that. I mean, some people think that ECOSOC could eventually become that body. But I disagree with that, first of all, because weighting vote would be impossible to agree on ECOSOC. I mean, it would be absolutely out of the whole historical tradition of the United Nations. So I think weighting voting cannot be. At the same time, weighting voting is essential for a major decision-making body on economic issues. Because otherwise, which is what happens in the existing bodies, when the powerful countries, in economic terms, are not sitting on the table, they are likely to disregard the decisions of other bodies. So you have to have the powerful countries sitting on the table. But at the same time, you have to have a system that not only has the powerful countries, but has the representation of the whole membership. That's what we think. Weighting votes is the only system that you can design that meets that criteria. Again, it will be a coordination of the UN system, including the Bretton Woods institutions, and as we propose, also WTO, which should be formally become a UN part of the UN system, it is not today. You know, I said, if you think of the Financial Stability Board or the Bank of International Settlements as an incarnation of those functions, you know, it should also be brought in, be brought into the system. And the function that we proposed was, aside from coordination, was actually the identification of gaps in the current system of cooperation, and identifying spillovers among the areas of responsibility of individual agencies on others. For example, the environmental effects of trade policies, the social effects of budgetary policies, which are areas in which you have the you know, the spillovers of the responsibilities of one agency in the system, one specialized agency, or another specialized agency. That was essentially what we proposed in the Stiglitz report.
Thank you very much to Dr. Ocampo. I would like to offer the floor to other speakers to comment on these initiatives. Ambassador Khan, please.
Well, a couple of comments. I think all the three proposals given by Dr. Ocampo are relevant to the debate that we are having today. I can readily agree with him on the proposals regarding filling the gaps and including WTO in the UN system. I will take some time to absorb his proposal on coordination mechanism, particularly the aspect of weighted voting. We think that this is something needed, in fact. We need a coordination mechanism. But its purpose, ultimate purpose, sitting in the United Nations, should be that we should have a linkage, a firm linkage between social and economic objectives, not just economic objectives. And now we have three dimensions: social, economic, and environmental. And the second thing, I'm coming from a developing country, is that we should address the problems of the South within the South, the G77 within the G77, and some pockets of poverty, even in the developed countries. If, Mr. President, I have your permission, I would like to make some additional comments. One is, while I was listening to other panelists, we have to be clear that United Nations is primus inter pares, which means it is first amongst equals. Next door, I was listening to Jeff Sachs, and he said that it is a body of equals looking for justice. I like that expression. But what is important here is to understand that the United Nations, when we wax rhapsodic about its importance, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it is not an omnipotent body. We have to work with other actors like G20. G20 will not supplant or substitute the United Nations. We have to work with it. For instance, in 2008, if we were to rely on our strengths as the United Nations to intervene effectively in the international financial crisis, we would not have succeeded. So we need that kind of speed and efficiency and targeting precision which G20 demonstrated. Now, I would also like to say that we do not need to universalize all the bodies, be it FSB or Bank of Settlements, because sometimes limited membership ensures efficiency and effectiveness in decision-making and implementation. When you have universal membership, decision-making and implementation become unwieldy and undeliverable. So, but these different organizations with different membership configurations can coexist and live together. United Nations, again, coming back to the United Nations, I would say that it is a body with universal membership and it deals with issues in a holistic manner. I mean, we're looking at all the dimensions, not just economic, social, and environmental, but also their linkage with peace and security issues. In this day and age, I mean, for us, for ECOSOC, the challenge is to manage change, as I said right in the beginning. And I don't know whether you like this guy or not. His name is Francis Fukuyama. And he says that we can't live with classic traditional multilateralism. We'll have to evolve or accept multilateralism. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Khan. Murad, would you have to say
something? You, Mr. President. I was reflecting on the advocacy made by Professor Ocampo in support of the ECOSOC, which we all, I believe, would like to see playing the role devoted to it by the Charter. At some point, Professor Ocampo said that the proposal of the high-level political forum just added to the confusion about who should be doing what in the United Nations. And listening to the Professor Ocampo reminding us of the proposal of the Stiglitz Commission on the Global Economic Board Commission, maybe Rio has also provided an opportunity to explore this avenue, in addition to reminding us with the role of integration vested with the ECOSOC for the three pillars, the high-level political forum could be a way to explore the track of this universal body, bringing together UN actors and non-UN actors, and benefiting from the presenting the first argument of the legitimacy when it comes to the universality, while organizing its mandate in a way that addresses the need for effectiveness. I was thinking that if we look at it from a positive perspective, it might allow for, but for the time being, again, the Charter has, in fact, put the limitation to the role of the ECOSOC by expressing, by precisely limiting the role to doing studies and reports. And the ECOSOC has been doing that in a satisfactory manner. But what about the executive powers referred to? They lie with the Bretton Woods institutions and with the informal intergovernmental groupings that we have seen developing throughout the years. Can we think about for the post-2015, for the agenda, about the possibility to bring a little bit more executive powers to the United Nations at the first place, and then inside the United Nations to start thinking where to locate them, whether with the ECOSOC acting as a board or the high-level panel with subsidiary bodies doing the day-to-day operations. The question of the financing of sustainable development is at the heart of this problematic. We do face a problem of compatibility between the aspirational goals and the means of implementation. We are ambitious. They have the means. But they are not, to our view, using those means adequately. Can we venture on this ground, having a new kind of financing institution for sustainable development? We know the United Nations Program for Development. We know the United Nations for Environment. We don't know who is doing the United Nations Program for Sustainable Development at the first place. Do we need this program without means of implementation? No. But the money is existing within the World Bank group, which belongs to the United Nations system. Is there a way to explore this possibility of establishing a sustainable development financial facilities that would not be a facility with the World Bank Group, but with the body vested with the post-2015 development agenda within the United Nations? That would make a serious conversation to our periodic dialogue between the ECOSOC and the Bretton Woods institutions. So far, they make the decision and they explain them. They explain the decisions to us. Can we start working together in order to do joint ventures? And in such a situation, all the proposals would make sense. The board proposed by the Stiglitz Commission, the role we would like to see for our high-level political forum, and so forth. Those are only aspirational proposals, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Murat. Johannes would like to intervene, or I give the floor? Fiji has asked for the floor, so I give you the floor first, and then Johannes, if you want to comment. Fiji has the floor.
Thank you. Just a brief, very brief intervention. Let me first thank you, Mr. President, for convening this thematic debate, and to also thank all the distinguished speakers for their very pertinent and interesting remarks. The Group of 77 and China had shared its views on this very same topic, and particularly the important role that the UN plays in global economic governance during the General Assembly thematic debate that was held on the 15th of April. And without wishing to repeat that statement here, we simply wish to reinforce the relevance of the views of the group that were shared then at this debate, and to also assure you, Mr. President, that the group will remain actively engaged in these discussions, and for that purpose we will be coordinating on the negotiations for the draft resolution presented by the delegation of Chile on global economic governance. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much to the representative of Fiji. Johannes, do you have some additional comments to make?
Well, on the proposal, a good way out for any EU representative is to say usually that we'll take it back to our member states and we'll put it, bring it to their attention, and we'll get back to you, which I would admit sometimes it may take a little time on occasion, although I think we are much more effective these days than we may have been in the past. But I would like to think that we more or less agree that at the end of the day, even more than a question of machinery, of the institutional machinery, it is more a question of working together to make sure that there is the kind of effectiveness, the kind of results that will make sure that the UN is not marginalized, as the distinguished representative of Chile said earlier, a result that nobody wants because of all of everything that the United Nations represents. If I may make a few additional comments to the ones that I made earlier, I like what the ambassador of Pakistan said on the United Nations being the first among equals. I think it is important that in promoting this debate, we make sure that the competences that have already been agreed, they are respected. I think we need to be careful. Sometimes there are things that may work at what we call in the EU the principle of subsidiarity. There are things that may work at the national level or at the regional level. You don't necessarily need to bring them all the way to the higher level. You may get some guidance from the higher level sometimes, which could be useful. But then, when it comes to the implementation, go with what works. I think we also need to be fair. Listen to the voice of the countries that are in need. And we also need to be innovative in the sense that there's a lot. It has been proved in recent years that, and we tried to the best of our abilities, of our current abilities, to be faithful to our commitments when it comes to ODA, but there are other sources, including from the private sector, including from philanthropy. We need to also make good use of them if we want to be successful in the achievement of the objectives that we set. Because otherwise, we may set the loftiest of goals, but we will not be able to get there. So there has to be a way in which also the voice of those actors, as I said earlier, is carefully listened to. So that we can, again, all together, reach the best possible results. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Johannes. Maybe I give the floor to Professor Ocampo for a last comment before we try to close the...
Thank you, Mr. President. Let me just make the following comments. I mean, to Ambassador Pakistan. This issue of limited membership, I think is a very important issue. For example, it is used sometimes to say that the General Assembly, in a sense, is a superior body to ECOSOC, because ECOSOC has limited membership. I think the best system is actually a universal system with limited membership of decision-making bodies. That's my view. And I think the UN sometimes makes a mistake of thinking that everything has to be approved by the universal body. I would say that the UN should use more broadly limited membership for decision-making bodies. That would be my personal view.
The Security Council.
Security Council, for example, is one of the, I guess, the best example in the UN system. So I don't think why that should be a problem, actually, so long as the body represents the whole membership, which is the case of ECOSOC. So I think duplicating, which is a typical issue because of that, the functions of ECOSOC in the General Assembly, because the ECOSOC has limited membership, is actually a basic mistake of conception, because at the end, ECOSOC does represent the whole membership of the United Nations. So I would say that's a general proposition. In the case, for example, in the financial stability, coming from a country which is the same as the president of ECOSOC, which is not a member of the G20, I don't know why my country should obey the Financial Stability Board. We have no voice in that board. So this is a basic problem of the self-appointed bodies. They should be serious in the fact that they are only steering change, which is what is said about the G20, but then they should not make decisions. They should bring those decisions to other bodies. So, for example, I would prefer the Global Monetary Cooperation, which is the most important achievement of the G20, to be brought to the IMF. I don't know why the G20 duplicates the IMF. It should be brought to the IMF. The IMF is actually, And actually, the most important coordination mechanism in macroeconomic policy is actually run by the IMF. But why then you have that duplication of functions between the G20 and the IMF? So that's, again, my view on that point. And on the comments of the ambassador of Algeria on the on executive powers, the executive powers can be given to are also in many of the organizations of the UN. The funds and programs have executive functions, and it's just a question of the membership giving those organs the capacity to execute. There is no reason why the World Bank takes areas of function that could be actually done by several organizations. Actually, it's quite a common practice for the World Bank to work with some of the UN funds and programs for very specific programs, which means that in the UN system. So it's just a question of how you define, and for instance, in some of the areas of financing sustainable development, the membership has decided to create new organizations to take that function right and do it through the World Bank. I think there has to be but my basic point is the executive powers. Yeah, the executive powers can be given to ECOSOC and I think by its organs, which are the funds and programs. So my own view is that the ECOSOC should actually exercise that executive powers more strongly, because the ECOSOC has to be the board of the boards of funds and programs. That's my view. That's one of the basic coordination functions that the UN Charter has given to ECOSOC should at least be exercised on a strong terms in relation to the funds and programs of the UN.
Thank you very much. I see that Mexico would like to intervene. Please, you have the floor.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'd like to thank you for convening this meeting and this thematic debate. It's important for all of us, particularly in the light of the negotiations that begin today on the important resolution that the delegation of Chile has submitted to member states. And Mexico, of course, will participate constructively in that debate. Took the floor because I believe it's important, this discussion at this stage in time, and particularly what Dr. Ocampo said with regard to the universality. And on many occasions, we spend a lot of time here in the United Nations talking about universality, and it's here important to see how the proposals made by Dr. Ocampo today on something which is perhaps more central in terms of importance, and that is what are the functions of each of the United Nations organs. In this regard, the comments are very useful in terms of what are the functions that ECOSOC has in terms of a revision of this, what functions could they have in the future. So my question would be, what specific functions do you see for the General Assembly, and in this way, how could we establish an institutional framework which would be complementary, coherent, which would not duplicate, and would provide the basis for establishing a post-2015 agenda? Thank you, President. Thank you very much. A very brief reply, perhaps. Yes, to repeat in my own language this time, perhaps. What I'm saying is that the follow-up on the commitments from the conferences should be a responsibility of ECOSOC, not of the GA. The coordination of funds and programs and all the cooperation in the United Nations at national level should be a responsibility of ECOSOC, not of the General Assembly. So these are two functions. So I would propose that I'm repeating what I said earlier with regard to the forums for development. The cooperation for development and all the follow-up follow up on all this agenda and ensuring efficiency in external aid should be coordinated within ECOSOC. And at the end of the day, it's a specific responsibility of ECOSOC to consider the gaps in global governance in terms of development and make a proposal of how to fill those gaps in terms of governability. They would be my specific proposals for ECOSOC. President, thank you very much. Well, I believe with this we've had an extremely interesting meeting. I'd like to thank Chile, which took the initiative and which has been very seriously committed to this. It's fundamental to all members of the United Nations and for the management of our system. As I see it, what we're trying to do is make the best use of our institutions. And how can we ensure that these institutions continue to have to remain relevant and adapt to events, to new players, the new needs, to problems which continue to emerge? I believe that RIO+20, for example, is already a response in this regard. They're looking beyond 2015. So this shows us how to come closer to a type of transition in which the ambitions are greater, the goals open up not only for specific issues of development, but for a global commitment, an overriding commitment, which is broader and one which I would say is more universal. A theme which has been mentioned here, and it's very important, is the capacity of executive powers and bodies. This is very, very closely linked to a great appeal which has been made, and that is that should be accountability, and there should be way of measuring. This is to ensure that we are effective and that we can have a serious oversight and control. So this is means that we do need a capacity to implement and to assist in the implementation. In this institution, ECOSOC, and in coordination with the General Assembly, because this lies with all members of the United Nations, of course, I believe that there is a clear recognition of how we can better use this institution, how this institution, which is a creation of the Charter, has a series of mandates, it has some series of capacities, and with a certain amount of reinforcement could be relevant as a platform for managing so many interrelated themes, economic and social issues. And it's up to us to achieve that, to bring this about, to systematize this so that it can be effective. Throughout this organization, there is a whole range of mandates, institutions, subcommittees, committees, etc. We also need to revisit this in the light of what is relevant and what is not relevant. Well, it should be deleted and give greater impulse to ensure that it does become relevant. There are many things to think about here. We could come back to this later and follow closely the evolution of this proposal made by Chile or the way we manage this resolution. So we close that theme. And before adjourning, I would like to remind delegations that tomorrow on the 17th of May at 3 p.m. in the Council Chamber, there will be informal consultations to discuss the elements of the draft ministerial declaration of the high-level segment of the 2013 substantive session of the Council, which will be held in Geneva this July. The Secretariat has circulated on my behalf the elements of the draft ministerial declaration, So I believe delegations will be prepared for those informal consultations. Delegations may also wish to refer the report to the Secretary General on the theme of this year's high-level segment, which is entitled Science, Technology and Innovation, and the Potential of Culture for Promoting Sustainable Development and Achieving the Millennium Development Goals. So that's the title of the Secretary General's report. The preliminary version of this report is available on the ECOSOC website. I'd like to thank the panelists for allocating time to us and the wisdom in which they have spoken to us and the way in which they've contributed. We will continue to look at these themes, and I'd like to thank all participants for their contribution. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.